Welcome to the Slow Style Home Podcast. I am so happy you're here. If you want to create a beautiful home that isn't cookie cutter or a trendy copy of someone else's, you're in the right place. And if you don't want to hurt your wallet or the planet to get one of those dream homes. And you can get started with my brand new quiz called Fix My Room. It's actually more of an assessment tool, but the word quiz, I think, sounds better because it's really easy to do. Just answer 20 multiple choice questions and you'll be pinpointing why your room isn't working, why it feels off, and why maybe your previous efforts haven't really panned out. Or maybe you're fairly happy with your room, but you want to make sure that your design choices are going in the right direction. Visit our website at slowstylehome.com and click on the quiz button right at the top. I'll tell you a little bit more about it later in the show. Now, let's dig into this week's episode. Sean Cheer, it is such a pleasure to have you back on the show again. I think this is your third time. I interviewed you before you became super famous with your first book.
Yes. I don't know about super famous, but yes, you did.
You weren't to me. You were super famous to me. And now you've got your second book out. And Sean Cheer is an artist and he is a collector. He is an antique shop owner, but I think artist is probably the category that I would put you in. His shop is called Cabinet and Camera. It's in upstate New York, and it is his incubator and his workshop. And I have just so enjoyed following you and the development of how you're teaching people, I think, how to do what it is you do. And this entire book, Sean Shearer's Vignettes, is devoted to the art of creating vignettes. And I wanted to start off by asking you why. What makes a vignette so powerful in a home? Why should we be doing them? And why'd you write a whole book about it?
Well, I guess it's first and foremost because as an artist, and why I got into antiques in the first place is my love of objects, usually small objects, because they're much more accessible and attainable and affordable. And
you can stick them in a suitcase. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can hold them in your hands and touch them and feel them and all those things. So I've always had an obsession with objects and objects that had great shape or form and patina, texture. So they happen to be antique objects, but I was never necessarily obsessed with antiques, or, you know, I would never consider myself a traditional antique collector or dealer. For me, it's about the shape and form and color. So I don't really care if it's, you know, 1810 or 1910 or 1970. If right. It has a great look or feel, then in a sense, a presence or an aura, you know, that's what I gravitate to.
Yeah.
So with the history of being an artist and the history of still lifes and art, vignettes just kind of, I didn't really start. When I opened up Cabinet and Camera, my shop, in 2007, the vignette making didn't really happen initially. I mean, it happened, but I wasn't really conscious of it. And only towards, I think, moving into the new space in Franklin, that gave me a much bigger, about three times the space as what I had originally in Andy's. So I was able to have more room to play with art and objects. And that's really in the last few years that I really started to practice making vignettes almost daily for my social media account. And then just people started, you know, I would get a lot of comments on Instagram. I love your vignettes. Your vignettes are my favorite. You have such a great eye, you know, how balanced. So when Vendome or Mark McGowan came to me from Vendome and said, maybe it's time to think about book number two. At first, it was like, well, is this going to be more interiors? I want to do something a little different. So I said, what about vignettes? Yeah. You know, it's like everyone's talking about them. Everyone loves them.
And your first book, like you said, the difference to me, the first book is really showing entire rooms. I mean, you do have some shots of vignettes, of course, in your first book, but you're really seeing, you were talking about composing an entire room. You were talking about flow between rooms, and this one is really zeroing in on on these moments that yes. can happen anywhere, all over our homes. And I think yours are so beautiful because they look, it's not that they look unintentional. They don't look forced. I know they're very intentional, but they don't right. look like you're trying to pose something for Instagram, let's say. You know, they look like these are where things kind of naturally landed over mm-hmm. the course of time in someone's home. And that's what I love about them. And I think we're going to get into more about how you do that. But do you want to say anything about kind of, am I on yeah, the right track I mean, here? Is that true?
Yes. No, absolutely. I mean, you know, sometimes the vignette comes together very, very quickly, you know, just intuitively. And I think now I do work very intuitively.
Yes.
It's, you know, it's just, I can kind of feel what objects work together. That isn't to say, though, that I don't move objects around or don't take one object out, exchange it for another before I photograph it. So
right.
it's still a process to this day. It's not like they instantly appear the way you eventually see them.
Right. But it's just faster.
Yeah.
You can kind of look at things. You're not, there's not as much trial and error, I don't think, before you snap the photo. But I guess what I'm getting at is that the compositions, even though you create them, you know, maybe you take a day to create one composition, it looks like it's been there in someone's home for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
There's a feeling to it that doesn't, like I said, it doesn't feel forced. It feels like this is where a person landed. This is where their mm-hmm. things landed. And, you know, a picture is added here or taken away there, or a candle might be, you know, it goes out. And so then that's replaced or whatever, but it just feels so organic. I know that's kind of an overused word.
Yeah. I mean, inevitable.
Inevitable. Oh, I love that.
You know,
inevitable.
It's like,
yes. Yes.
Like, this is exactly where it should be.
Yes.
Or how it landed. And that is, you know, definitely something that I strive for.
Yeah. And I think about some other design books that you see, and as well, there's a great deal of thought that's put into a corner, let's say the corner of a room, and you know, maybe what's on the shelves and the chair and the lamp and everything. And it doesn't feel like someone lives there.
Yeah. And I think, you know, might be jumping ahead, but in my book, I state in one of the, you know, lessons or chapters about trying to avoid the bad restaurant decor look or that.
Yes.
Because, you know, there are a lot of people talking about vignettes.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are really not very good.
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't feel natural. They look like a staged home or a
right.
restaurant.
Right.
They don't
or
look,
a hotel.
They don't, yeah. Or a hotel. They don't look inevitable. They don't look, you know, authentic. They don't look like somebody actually loves these objects and uses the objects.
Mm.
It's not just about putting three objects together on a round tray and then throwing in a plant for color.
Right.
You know, it's so much more than that, you know.
Let's get into that. So I think that you are a master of both visual composition, as we were just talking about, but also storytelling. And those two things are aligned with two of the skill sets that I teach that I believe are necessary to become your own interior decorator. And they are creativity, by which I mean the act of training your eye through practice, and storytelling, by which I mean developing the skill of translating a feeling or an experience into design decisions. And you do both so beautifully. And I want to talk about each of them. So let's talk about creativity first. You trained and worked as a painter in your younger years, which we've talked about on other interviews on this show. But that means that you already know about composition. And you already understood things like symmetry and visual weight and sculpting the negative space. How do you suggest someone who doesn't know those things start practicing so that they're training their eyes in the same way?
The way to learn is to see. So whether that's flipping through a lot of books going to out to antique shows or your local antique mall and seeing how different people are displaying their objects, and you might learn some, you know, get some pointers. So it really is about practicing with your eyes by looking.
Yeah.
And then practicing in your home. It really is about practicing and studying. And that studying can be fun. It's not like going to school studying. It's going out and looking at things, going to a museum, go to a high-end antique show. It might not be anything you can afford, but there'll be amazing displays.
Right.
And it's a great education.
And you also talk quite a bit in the book about the sort of the history of vignettes and how it's sort of the 3D version of still life paintings that you know, have a long history. Yes. And I absolutely love going to a museum and going to the still life section, the Northern Renaissance stuff. Those painters really understood light and shadow and of course, the flow of objects and how they fit together. And I think that's such a great education, too. And you include some still life paintings, some shots of them in your book as well.
Yes, yes. In fact, many of the vignettes were made specifically just for this book. And I really did channel that beautiful Dutch light, what I call that side light that, yes, you know, grazes across the still life and gives you that amazing shadow effect.
Right. Walk us through, if you can remember what it's like before it was intuitive, you know, paint a picture for us. How do you look at an empty spot in your home and start thinking about how you're going to compose it? I'm just wondering if you can kind of give us like a little mini lesson right now.
So basically, you need to start with your main furniture piece, whether it's a chest of drawers or a shelf or any other flat surface object. So that is basically your grounding. Mm-hmm. Or your main piece that will give the visual weight to support your vignette.
Yeah.
Then once you have your main piece, I usually come with a set of objects I in mind that I want to use.
Okay.
So whether they are connected by theme, and that theme can be color or texture or period or shape. Sometimes they're seemingly very disparate objects, but they have something that links them. That makes sense that they go together. Mm-hmm. And then you just start playing with those objects on the surface.
Yeah.
You know, there's obviously basic lessons. You don't want all the objects to be the same height, all the same volume. You want different heights, different textures, different shapes. Right. I always say over and over again, opposites attract. They attract for a reason because they create a visual tension. Mm-hmm. So you play with those kind of objects. And you can, I think, once you start doing this enough in your home, you'll automatically notice when something feels maybe a little too monotonous or too matchy match.
Yes, yes.
You know, and you need to take something out that matches too much and put in something that juxtaposes a little.
Yeah.
So it really, you know, it should be fun. It's not like anyone's going to come and grade you.
Right,
you know,
it's
like relax and just, you know, live with it. It doesn't work. Try a few other objects. I do so many of them because in my shop, the objects come and go. So I have to constantly create them.
Yeah.
So, and that's partly why I opened up Cabinet Camera, for this main reason. So I can constantly create. To me, I think I've said this before to you, whether it's a painting or a vignette or even a dinner party, I think everything you create or everything I create is part of my artistic production.
Yes.
You know, I don't really see a hierarchy in it all.
I loved it when you first said that. I think that was on the first time we interviewed you. That was such a great conversation. Right. Okay. So playing around is obviously key. Don't be afraid to play around, try things out. And I think, you know, it's hard to explain it in a podcast where we don't have the visuals here. So the book, mm-hmm. talk about an education. I mean, you just look at those pages and you're going to absorb so many of these kind of design lessons. If you pay attention, you know, don't just flip through the book, but watch how an organic shape is arching over something either one way or the other, you know, oh, that's interesting. He put it that way. He made the arch go left instead of right. And that, you know, that made for a certain kind of feeling. And then you also talk about your vignettes go up the wall. They start on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
But then, and I think that's important too, to realize that the vignette is, it's connected to or related to the other things around it. And oftentimes that's what's on the wall. And so in your case, I feel like sometimes you rehang things on the wall.
Yes. Yeah. No, I mean, your vignette should be just an element in an overall interior. And it should all be connected.
Right.
And I guess that's why a lot of those vignettes I mentioned that don't work, they all seem to be kind of plopped down and there's no connection to the rest of the room.
Right.
Or even the wall there, whether it's a bookshelf or a tabletop, there's no connection to the wall, which hence means there's no connection to the rest of the space.
Right.
You know, a vignette is in itself its own little conversation, mm-hmm. its own little entity, but then that conversation expands throughout the rest of the room. And one of the key things I talk about is eye movement.
Yes, let's talk about that a little bit.
And, you know, you do that by a repetition of color. You mentioned the arch of a branch going one way or the other. Well, that arch was probably in that direction to help bring your eye up and back down in a circular motion. Mm. I always say it's as simple as if your eye gets stuck in one section, then it's stuck there for a reason. You need to add something or move something so your eye keeps flowing somehow. It's one way to do that is with a physical piece like a sculpture or like a branch, but also with hits of color.
Okay.
So you can have, you know, red somewhere in the vignette in an object like a vase, but maybe you then have a hit of red in a painting or a print on the wall. Mm. I always say you don't have to have any artistic background to notice these things. But we all notice these things. I don't expect anyone to walk in and see your vignette and go, oh, look how those four yellows go around the vignette or around your room.
Right.
That's so soothing.
Look, my eyes moving up and down
yes,
and around it.
Yeah. But they are. They're doing it unconsciously, or they're thinking that unconsciously. So eye movement is really key. And there's a number of those lessons in the book about how to keep your eye moving.
Right. You know. And you're really driving home this idea of the power of noticing and looking. Like I said, you can't just flip through the book. You really have to stare at it for a minute to get the lesson. And to me, that's the basis of training your eye. You know, you can learn the rules and go, oh, yes, groups of three or, oh, different heights or different visual weight or whatever. But it's more fun, too, to look at this beautiful book and take, you know, as opposed to reading a bunch of text, right? I mean,
right, yeah.
There's just so much to learn from it. I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about, so that to me is what I consider to be creativity. It's the act of creating something, the act of composing something. And then the other skill set that I think you're such a master of is storytelling, as I mentioned. And in the book, well, all of your vignettes have a story. Some are much more abstract. Some are just about the objects themselves and their history, or just even their shape and how they're relating to one another. But in the beginning of the book, you talk about vignettes can also be little mini autobiographies. And I wonder if you could give us some ideas about that. You know, you say sometimes you will tell your students, make a vignette out of objects that you represent.
Yeah, it was one of the lessons I did when I taught drawing was to create a self-portrait only using objects. And they'll all look at me like
what?
What? But in the end, they became most of the students' favorite projects.
Oh.
Because during critique, they had to talk about what each object meant to them and why. And it was such an amazing process and it's such an amazing lesson because they realized how much these objects say about themselves.
Yes.
And it also was a way that opened, you know, they shared something with their fellow students they probably never would have.
Yeah.
There was never one result that didn't work or didn't give you some inkling of who this person was.
Right. Right.
So when you just start thinking about, well, what are my favorite objects and why do I collect these objects and what are the objects I choose to bring home and surround myself with? What do they say about me? Do you like angular mid-century or do you like, you know, really organic, brightly colored things? Do you like rusty, chippy painted things? And what does that say about your personality and things like that? So
you talk about collecting in that way too. You know, what you choose to collect obviously is going to say something about who you are.
Yeah, for sure. You live in a very sparse or very monastic kind of interior. It says something about that person as opposed to someone who's filled with a lot of collections or a very layered, rich home. I mean, there's just many different personalities out there in the world. And you can have many different layers to your personality that you can reveal in different vignettes. I mean, sometimes I have vignettes in my home that have a real sense of humor, mm-hmm. you know, like a taxidermy shark on top of a gilded convex mirror. And that's deliberately meant to be cheeky or funny.
Right, right.
You know, that's part of my personality. It's not to say every vignette has to be telling someone who right. you are. It naturally is anyways. But if you think of it in terms of that, then you can have maybe a little more fun with some of them.
Well, and I think it might give somebody a starting place, you know, having a direction like, oh, okay, this is what this vignette's going to be about. Now I'm going to go around my house and collect these kinds of things, or I'm going to do it all on a color, or I'm going to do it on a texture, or I don't know. You know, having a storyline in mind can be a way to get started. And then I think eventually, like you, the stories become more embedded in the objects themselves. Mm-hmm. Which is the brilliance of what you do. All right, I want to wrap up with what might be a little bit of an abstract question. What's something that you think we can and should be getting from our homes that most people aren't? And I ask this because these vignettes, they're giving me so much joy. I can't even imagine how much more joy I'd get from them if I could really touch the things and be in a home that had some of these vignettes. What are we not getting out of our homes?
Well, joy, you said it.
Yeah.
But I would say a sense of place that is a sense of belonging. Mm. Everyone says they want their home to be comfortable, but to me that is deeper, is feeling like a sense of belonging. And I think we all strive to feel like we belong in this world.
Yeah.
And to me, when I come home, I feel like I can let my shoulders down. Like, this is where the place I belong most.
Yeah.
Is in my home, is in my surroundings.
And so do you attribute that to your objects?
Yeah. I'm surrounded by the things I love. I'm surrounded in an interior that I created. I travel a lot for my work, for buying and everything. So I spent a lot of time in hotels. And while hospitality interiors have greatly improved.
Right.
I always feel out of place.
Right, right.
You know.
Temporary, just, yeah.
And I think you should not feel out of place in your home.
Yeah.
When you walk into that door, you should feel like, this is where I belong. This is my place. This is my spot in the world. And that's more than feeling comfortable. It's a sense of belonging. You know, a lot of people, I think, just use their places as a place they're kind of crashing in.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And not inhabiting. So,
good way to put it. Yes.
You know, you should really inhabit and feel like this is where I belong.
And you can't do that with a bunch of generic stuff.
No.
Such a beautiful book. So proud to have you on the show. And I encourage everyone to get their hands on this, because like we've been saying all along, there are so many lessons packed into this book. Just take a page a day and stare at it and you will learn something. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you so much. Wonderful.
Thanks so much for listening. I know your time is valuable, and I really do appreciate you spending it with me. And please, please, please take a minute to leave a review for Slow Style Home wherever you get your podcasts. It honestly does help keep this show on the air, and your feedback is highly valuable to me. Have a great day, and I'll be back in your earbuds soon. Bye for now.